What's up, everyone? This is the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. I'm your host, Scott, joined by Rich with your average everyday Chiefs talk. All of our episodes are available on all major podcast platforms. You can just search or look for the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. And now, exclusively, additionally, we have added all of our episodes directly onto our Facebook page, so you don't have to actually listen to any of the other streaming podcast platforms if you don't wish to as well. And then also you can follow us on our various social media pages, such as Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. All right, so this is the first weekend we haven't had any football at all. So what are your thoughts, Rich, that we're not having any football, at least for the foreseeable future, I would say?
Well, I mean, this is the first weekend day, right, that we haven't had any. So
right.
It's a little bit different. And I know the scouting combine is coming up. But yeah, let's say I guess I can only focus on soccer. And NBA All-Star weekend is started last night. So, which I noticed I do not have TNT or TBS on Fubo TV. So I'm going to have to catch YouTube highlights on all that fancy stuff. So yeah, so football, you know, obviously takes up our weekends for the majority of the fall and into the winter. So yeah, it's different, but I guess, you know, it's okay to not have to, you know, worry too much about if Patrick Mahomes is getting ridiculed 24/7 on the field, because off the field it never stops.
Right. Correct. Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's no football this weekend, but they're just going to pick up with the next year, the new year stuff coming up here in the next few weeks. So it really only slows down for a few weeks and then it just kind of picks right back up to the new season. So I know we're going to be ready to get amped up to see what all the new talent coming up in the draft, and then just obviously the free agency period with all the different players swapping different teams and all that. So that's going to be fun looking forward to as well. So as far as the last game of the calendar year of the 2021 season, obviously was the Super Bowl, and the Rams came away with a victory 23-20 over the Bengals. So what was your your Super Bowl like party, like watch kind of vibes going on, as far as like, you know, just have any good food, or how was that?
No, we kept it very simple. You know, just some dip, Rotel is dip too, right? Some Rotel, right. Some buffalo dip, some wings. And yeah, it was pretty laid back. Nothing too crazy. Didn't spend too much time in the kitchen making food for the family. But yeah, it was just simple, right? Cheering on for a good game. How about you?
Right. Yeah, I just went over to my friend's house who was a big Rams fan, and I watched the Super Bowl with them 3 years ago when they obviously lost to the Patriots. But yeah, same thing, kind of just you know, like finger foods kind of thing. Wasn't anything like real big, but just kind of focusing you know, on the game and interacting with my friend, just trying to, you know, keep his spirits up to see, you know, if the Rams would pull up the victory. So because I'm, you know, obviously we, you know, watching the game, he was actually pretty nervous there in the end, of course, for the Rams. So, but that was it was pretty interesting. It was fun for sure. You know, watching it with someone from one of the teams in the Super Bowl, when, you know, we've had our team in the Super Bowl the last 2 years. So it was obviously fun watching with somebody else with their team too as well. So on the commercial side, I'll first for say that I didn't really focus a lot on the commercials. I don't know how you feel about it. In the last few years, since the Chiefs have been in, I've been really into the game more. Obviously this year the Chiefs weren't in it, but I just haven't really been on the commercials as much as I have been in the past. But I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good, you know, to have those commercial breaks from, you know, just watching dudes walk around on a sideline and talk and stuff like that. But I will say that they've definitely watered them down a lot, right? So I think to counter your, let's say, you know, yeah, you focus on the game because it's the Chiefs, so on and so forth, and last year's Super Bowl, I think we were all like, man, just end this thing already.
Right.
But they've also just – they've sucked for the last few years, and it's just part of modern day, as they say, cancel culture, right? So I think it's a combination of our focus on the game and then – just watered down commercials, because even this year's commercials, you know, my favorite was the NFL one, right? Where the kids are playing like the video game or whatever, and you know all the NFL players tear up the house. But aside from that, I can't remember anything that was too funny, that was like cool to see. There was a lot of advertising. There was that really weird one with the QR code scan, and then the website crashed, which it didn't even work. So yeah, I'm interested to hear, you know, what were your thoughts on the commercials and all that.
That was one I was going to point out was it was the Coinbase commercial where you had the QR code that was going from the top bottom of the screen and all that. And so me and my friend got our phones out. We're trying to scan the dang thing, and I couldn't even scan it on
Yep,
time.
sure did too.
I mean, like for that, it was creative, right? I mean, you never see something like that where it made it interactive for people at home, like get their phones out, you know, and you know, try to scan the TV to you know see what it was because no one knew what it was obviously at that moment. But I could never get it to work. But then, I found out later that it was Coinbase, and you know, their site crashed because so many people got on it. But kind of like what you were saying is they've been kind of watered down. Not only that, but it's now you know reportedly like $7 million per you know
Cool.
30-second deal to get a spot.
Yeah, that
So it's a
doesn't make
lot.
sense.
So it's a lot of money as well. But I thought like a lot of them, at least that I did see, it seemed like a lot of it was nostalgic. I don't know if you noticed that too. Like they brought in a lot of different things, themes or actors from like past things. Like there was a, I forget what the episode, or not episode, there was the Sopranos commercial. They played like the music from the Sopranos, but it was like a car commercial. I noticed there was a lot of like nostalgic kind of stuff for what I had seen like for that kind of things as well. I will point out there was one that I thought was the most funniest one, and people probably nationwide didn't see this. It was a local one. It was Hawaiian Bros, and I don't know if you saw this one, but I thought it was hilarious because after doing research on it, I guess there was a contest to see who would get the spot or to get on the commercial, but it basically looked like it was like filmed in someone's backyard, and they said, "Hey, get some kids together. We'll get in the backyard, and we'll film it on a phone and do it in like all in like one take." And it was just hilarious, like how they did it. But I thought that was funny.
Yeah, definitely don't remember that one. I'll have to
Yeah, it
go
was.
back and try to figure it out.
Yeah, so they had obviously. I mean, you have your local ones and you have your nationwide ones. Because I know it's all like the Hy-Vee ones and all that. But I guess another one I'll point out too is I did see like Patrick Mahomes had another new commercial too as well. I forget what it was for exactly, but that was one that kind of caught my eye as well. But I didn't, other than that, I didn't really see anything like, you know, intrigue me. I mean, yeah, you have those Cheetos commercials they have every year, and obviously like the car commercials and all that stuff. But other than that, those are the ones that kind of point out the most for me.
Makes sense. Was the Cheetos one the where they revealed like the hot chip Doritos
I
with the
believe
animals,
so,
like the sloth? Yeah,
yeah.
but that one was weird. Of course, the kids, you know, were like, "Look at all these animals!" And like, there are several people in my family, including myself, that eat hot chips probably once a week. So, or hot Cheetos. You know, that's a debate in itself versus what we call hot chips versus hot Cheetos. But yeah, so that was a cool little
Crazy.
funny one.
Yeah.
But yeah, the NFL one, I really liked it because, you know, anytime, remember the 100-year commercial that they revealed a few years ago? That
That
one
was
was
really
cool.
good.
So it was kind of like the same thing, right? But in virtual format. And then it even went back with some of the players. So I thought that was cool. That to me is always cool to see.
Right. Yeah, I like those ones. Like you said, the 101 they had a while back, that one was really fun seeing, for sure. So on to the halftime, which actually it's funny. It was actually I was looking forward to halftime more, looking to the game, and it wasn't like any kind of sour grapes. The Chiefs weren't in the game. It really wasn't. I was still looking forward to the game too, but I just you know, this halftime had so much anticipation build up that if you're what between the ages of, I don't know, 33 and 50, you probably would get this more than anybody else because you know it was kind of during your time as far as when a lot of this music and you know people came out with Dre and Snoop and Eminem and Mary J. and you know even modern day Kendrick. So it was really something to look forward to. And you know overall, I thought it was awesome. I thought it kind of lived up to most of everything expected that I thought it would be. You know, the surprise with 50 Cent was pretty cool. The only thing I didn't like was Eminem only had one song. I felt like Mary J. did like three or four bits, where like Eminem did like one song. I think Kendrick did like one song. So, you know, them adding 50 Cent, you know, it kind of gave a little bit less time than everybody else. I mean, not to say that it wasn't cool seeing them, it was, but it is hard when you have five or six artists and they want to do all their little things. And then, of course, you know, Snoop and Dre ending it. But I don't know your thoughts about this, but you know, at one point I thought whenever Dre was on the piano and he was playing the intro to "I Ain't Mad at You," which is the Tupac song, I almost thought like a hologram was going to show up. But then again, like we were talking about, me and my friend was like, well, the stadium is too bright, so there wasn't a lot of dark spots to be able to do a hologram like that. But I'm like, interesting to hear about your thoughts about the halftime.
No, I mean, let's say the Tupac piece, I 100% was like, oh, they're about to do it. They're going to turn the lights off and then do something, right? But no, they weren't able to do that. I agree. Like, I mean, I'm not the biggest Mary J. Blige fans. I think she featured really well in songs, but, you know, to say like her songs, I'm not the huge, you know, the biggest fan of. But it was super cool. I think it fit perfectly with the LA theme. You know, Snoop Dogg wearing the blue and yellow bandana outfit, which was cool. And then, of course, you know, let's say Kendrick Lamar being one of my favorite artists. That was cool, but I thought he would have picked something more modern or maybe even dropped a new song, which I thought part of on one of them he was releasing a new song, but it was just a different version of, you know, one of his current songs. But yeah, I mean, it was overall cool. The 50 Cent part had me cracking up. I didn't know that was going to happen, which is super funny, right? Because I know, you know, 50 Cent became a meme in several aspects.
Yes. Yeah.
But, and it's funny. And I mean, you know, people just got to learn to laugh, you know, with age. Everyone gains weight with age. So that was funny. And the fact that they had the poor guy hanging up there, which I don't know if you've read the story or there's like a video on one of the social media sites where he said he had to jump up there right before. And then when they, you know, rolled down and like raised up the curtain or whatever it was, he was, you know, hanging on. But he was like, man, I was hanging on for dear life up there. So, but that was cool. And overall, it was just a cool thing.
Right.
So, yeah, like you said, right, for us folks in our mid-30s, it was super nostalgic, right, from a music perspective for us. So, no, yeah, overall, to me, the best one.
Yeah, so that's a lot of debate. I mean, kind of, I guess, real quick, I mean, a lot of people think is that the best ever. I guess it really depends on, you know, your age group and everything about what kind of you think about. I think a lot of people said, yeah, this was great, but they still like the Michael Jackson one or the Prince one, you know, that kind of thing too as well. I mean, I think mine to this one is up there, is probably being my favorite just because of these kind of artists that I kind of grew up on and all that. So I think to me, it's my favorite, but I can see how some people would think maybe some other ones, you know, might be more so on their favorite of all time for sure as well. So as far as on the actual game itself, obviously, you know, I'd mentioned the Rams had ended up winning 23-20 on that last drive where there was a lot of flags. And I think most of those flags are pretty much warranted anyways. It was definitely, you know, pass interference on some of those and holding there in the end. You know, for a little bit there in the second half, you know, kind of how the Bengals have played in the playoffs, at least as of late, especially against the Chiefs, you know, they came out really good with some second half adjustments. Did really well. And I thought there for a moment, obviously before that last drive, that the Bengals probably had this game and they were going to end up winning the game. But what were your thoughts going in there to that, you know, final moments or that second half where the Bengals kind of gained control?
Kind of had the same thought, you know, as the Chiefs games versus them. You know, they adjusted well. The Niners just couldn't get run the ball at, or the Niners, the Rams couldn't run the ball at all. And they didn't have an answer. They couldn't adjust, you know, after losing OBJ. You know, the defense was 100% focused in on Cooper Kupp. And there in that last drive, or I think, it, well, I mean, second to last drive, right, since the last one was basically to kill the clock, is they just said, you know what, we got to get the ball to Cooper Kupp, and we're going to force it to him. He did an amazing job of you know, being the wide receiver he's been all year, so... So, yeah, it was good, and that's what I like about – I know a lot of folks don't like Zach Taylor with the Bengals. I say he's not a good coach or whatever, but, I mean, he beat the Chiefs twice by adjusting at halftime, and then he almost beat the Rams in the same way by adjusting at halftime. You know, could he have adjusted better for his offensive line so that Burrow wasn't getting killed?
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think so, but, you know, because he couldn't all year. You know, sometimes it's just who you got. So, yeah, so, no, it was a very good game, right, overall, from the start to the end. It was competitive. Maybe there were times where it was a little dull on action, but, you know, that's when defenses are stepping up, right?
Right. And I was telling my buddy, obviously, I said, who was a Rams fan. I said, you know who's going to make a play on this last drive the Bengals have the ball? It's going to be Aaron Donald. Like, he's going to get a sack.
Yeah, it has to be, right?
Yeah, I was like, he's going to make that play. And he did. I called it, he's going to get a sack, but it almost was a sack. But I was like, yeah, he obviously he had to show it up. And obviously, Cooper Kupp got the MVP of the game, but you could probably even go with Aaron Donald on that. And then, because I know my buddy was thinking Matthew Stafford. I'm like, well, the only reason why I wouldn't say Stafford is because he had that one bad interception, and then the other one obviously wasn't his fault. But right. I just didn't think Stafford was going to get it. I think it was going to either be Kupp or Donald, which I think either one would have been rightfully deserved. But I think, obviously, Cooper Kupp was the guy. They just said, screw it. If he's triple team, we're going to him on this last drive anyway. So, but yeah, so, I mean, obviously, he's well-deserved that he got MVP.
Yeah, I mean, I agree 1,000,000%. You couldn't go wrong with Kupp or Donald. Kupp was the best player on offense when, you know, everybody knew the ball was going to him. He still made clutch catches, had 2 touchdowns. Boy, very deserving. In my opinion, should have been the MVP of the year. He did get offensive player right. But then, yeah, Aaron Donald, I mean, they had, I think, 7 sacks on the team, and he had 2. Pressures, the hurries. I mean, like you said, right, the last play of the game, it technically was a sack. You know, Burrow was able to just sling it away. But, yeah, I mean, you pay your players the way that the Rams do, and you go and acquire folks like Staff, like OBJ, even Von Miller, who had a really good game. I think he had 2 sacks as well. You know, that's why you pay those guys, or that's why you go after players like that. So it all worked out for the Rams.
Yep, for sure. And, you know, we might even be talking about OBJ more. That was one thing that he kind of got hurt there early in the game too as well, which kind of disappointing. But, you know, obviously he was happy there in the end that he ended up, you know, getting a ring and while the Rams won. But that was kind of disappointing to see that, you know, sometimes these players make it to Super Bowl one time and they go down with an injury like that and not able to finish the game. So that's kind of disappointing. But at the end of the day, he still, you know, got it, you know, his team won and he got a ring. So. That obviously will count too. So now we're on to actually our main focus of this episode, which is our part 2 of the Chiefs season 2021 season review, which actually will focus mainly on the defense, and we'll just talk briefly about the special teams. But Rich, you were up with the defensive line group, so I'll send it over to you with your thoughts on how they performed this year.
All right, so. Talking about the defensive line, here's just some high-level stats about them. They had 28 total sacks, which was 28th best, worst in the league, however you want to. They were 28th out of 32, right? Jones led the way with 9 sacks, and Frank Clark had 4.5. So those are just overall numbers purely from a defensive line perspective. I don't have access to pressure numbers, quarterback hurries, hits, all that fancy stuff. Because that's also very telling on defensive line and is important. But just some high-level numbers, too, on our defense so that it kind of sets the way for the conversation as we talk position by position. Overall, the defense was 20th in stopping the run, 26th in passing yards, and 30th in yards per catch. So defensively, I think they ended up overall about like middle of the pack because first of the year versus end of the year was, you know, two different stories, right? But and yards, you can give up 1,000,000 yards in a game as long as people don't score points. Points-wise, the Chiefs are, you know, within the better half of points, right? And again, because it was two different halves of the season. So defensively, for the defensive line, my overall grade for them was a D. The reason why I didn't give them an F is because the Melvin Ingram pickup, and they did have a lot of pressures and hurries. They, you know, the rushing grade specifically for defensive line will probably be, you know, somewhere around a B plus or an A because they did a good job in limiting the run and making plays. Obviously, from a yardage perspective, right? I already mentioned that they were on the lower half of the league, but you know, we have a lot of money tied up between Chris Jones and Frank Clark. So you would want more than 13.5 sacks between them two. They almost had about half of the sacks of the overall team, but they should have a higher output. I understand they were injured at times, so I get that piece. But again, you know, when you're paying guys both top 5 in their position money, you want more sacks out of them. I understand Steve Spagnuolo's scheme isn't so much about just organic pressure with the front four, you know, a lot of blitzing and bringing linebackers and secondary players. So that also explains a little bit of it. But, I mean, it is what it is, right? You're paying those guys to make more plays. So my defensive line grade at the end of the day is a D. You know, the Melvin Ingram pickup keeps it from being an F. There are some schematic things that, you know, probably, you know, warrant a higher grade. But like I said, at the end of the day, for me, it's big money players, top five in their position, money-wise, they should have more than 13 and a half sacks.
All right. And so moving on to the linebacker group, I end up giving the linebackers overall a grade of B, just because, you know, I felt like obviously we'll start with, you know, some of the stats from our linebacker group with Nick Bolton, who is our Chiefs actually rookie of the year on the team, had led the team with 112 tackles. It's a lot for a rookie. Who was fantastic all year round. Every time he was in there, he felt like he could make a play on somebody. I think if I'm not mistaken, he obviously that with 112, he had the most in franchise history for a rookie, and also the ninth rookie league-wide since 2000, having recording over 110 tackles and 10 for loss, which he actually had 11 tackles for loss on the year. So there's nothing really more you can say about Nick Bolton, other than he had a fantastic rookie year. Obviously, like I said, since he was the Chiefs rookie of the year, you know, and then obviously Creed Humphrey is probably the Chiefs offensive rookie of the year. But yeah, Nick Bolton had a fantastic year when he was out there. And then you had, obviously you had your veteran with Anthony Hitchens, who had led second in our tackles for the year with 80 tackles on the season. And you know, I think he played average mostly for the whole year. There wasn't anything I could say that really stood out from his performance on the year. And then obviously with Willie Gay Jr. and Ben Neiman, I know a lot of the linebackers were kind of in and out of the group, either with if it was on COVID or they got hurt, because I know there's a few games where some of the players were kind of hurt. So actually Ben Neiman played a little bit more than even I think Willie Gay at times too as well throughout the course of the year. Because I think Ben Neiman ended up with 57 tackles and Willie Gay had 48. But overall, I think for the linebacker group, even though they were shuffling people in and out, I think they played pretty average at times, especially in the beginning of the year. They kind of slow. But obviously, towards after that first seven game stretch that we had, our defense kind of picked up and played a lot better. But I think the linebacker grade with I gave it as a B was a pretty spot on for that category.
The Ben Neiman part, you know, that always cracks me up, because I think he in the most respectful way possible, right? Always
right
diminishes things.
Yes.
All right. So next position group up are the cornerbacks. Again, numbers 23rd in receptions allowed, 24th in passing yards allowed, 17th in receptions per game, and then 15th in touchdowns allowed. Again, we know that the Chiefs' theme is there was a first half and a second half to the defensive season. Overall, PFF grades for the Chiefs' corners are Rashad Fenton, the 27th best-rated corner, Tre'Davious Ward at the 35th, and Legarius Sneed, 38th, right? So not terrible. The fact that most teams have, you know, obviously between some, you know, somewhere between two to three or one to three really good corners. And those numbers are still within the top third of the NFL in corners. So that's good. I think the unit is on average good. But again, right, we're looking at the whole picture for the entire year. Injuries did cripple the unit a little bit, right, throughout the year in different spots. We talked about at the beginning of the year how Tre'Davious Ward, this is a big one for him to bounce back. And I think he did when he was out there. The exception being the Bengals game when Jamar Chase tore him up. But, you know, I kind of blame that a little bit more on Steve Spagnuolo and some of those defensive calls. So, again, because we're looking at the full year grade, I gave them a D as well. You know, it's probably a mixture of like a F and a B minus or a C. You know, first half to second half. It's a unit that's young. It's still young, decently experienced. It just needs to be more consistent overall, and you know, just stay healthy so that they are better going down the road. Now, if the defensive line does better, the cornerbacks do better, so they go hand in hand. So, you know, that makes sense. That's why I have them both as a D.
All right. So, on the final group on the defensive side, on the safety group, my grade is a C minus. And a lot of it obviously had to do with some struggles throughout the whole season on some broken coverage from some passes that were deep, kind of like what you kind of just mentioned on some of the could be more of the schemes of what Steve Spagnuolo called. But obviously, we'll start with Tyrann Mathieu, who also was the Chiefs team MVP of the year. He led the way with 76 tackles for that group. You know, even though, you know, Tyrann Mathieu was the MVP of the Chiefs team, and not only the defense too as well, he's that leader. Surprisingly, he had a pretty good season, I would say. You know, obviously there wasn't anything, I would say, to point out from differences between like maybe this year and last year from him on this group. But obviously he's still, I think he's still performed pretty well overall in the group. The other part of the safety group is kind of where you probably saw a little bit of difference. Obviously with Sorensen playing a lot of a bigger role for the first 7 weeks, and could be a factor of why, like, you know, this grade for one, and kind of how we played the first seven games, were it was surprising, you know, like Juan Thornhill, who was our other safety part of this group, did not play those first, or didn't really play a whole lot, because which we never really actually got to find out why. It was more so maybe he wasn't you know, showing up to practice, you know, as far as focused or whatnot. But he obviously was, I guess you'd say, quote unquote, in the doghouse for a while for the most of the first half of the year before he eventually took over that other safety role. But yeah, I mean, the reason why I gave it a C minus is because they had kind of struggled. And like I said, obviously mentioning Sorensen in this group will always probably, you'll get a little bit of, you know, a little bit of the below average, I would say, performance from the group, just because he makes plays from time to time. Yeah, he does. We all know that. But he does end up sometimes blowing some coverage plays, or you know, plays that just weren't either like fit for him to be able to cover as well as other safety. So I mean, there's obviously, you know, you can say more and more about that area, but I thought that C minus is probably spot on as far as how overall the whole safety group played, and when Thornhill started taking over more of that secondary role from Sorensen as the other safety, I thought it got much better towards the end of the year. So we'll have to see how that goes forward. But yeah, I think C minus for the year for the safety group is pretty spot on. So that's it for the defense. I know, Rich, you have the special teams.
Yep. So special teams, grade I have for them is an A. Butker's numbers were 25 out of 20. So from a field goal perspective, he was 25 out of 28. 89% field goal, extra point, 89 field goal made percentage, right? Extra points is 47 out of 49, about 96% on the PAT attempts. And then Townsend had 37 punts for a 47.2 yards per punt. I had to remember the acronym there, which was 13 best in the NFL. And then overall, from a return perspective, they had 4 touchdowns, which is tied 4th in the NFL. So Dave Tobe does a really good, you know, I mean, he's at one point he was up for head coaching jobs, interviewing for them. You know, would have been another John Harbaugh, since he was special team coach for Reed as well. But yeah, his unit is always, you know, one of the best in the NFL. I don't remember off the top of my head any touchdowns that they gave up as a return unit. But again, a little bit harder to find from a data perspective, and the memory isn't that great. So overall, the grade for the special teams is an A.
All right. So now moving on to most valuable defensive player of the year. And I don't know how you felt about this one, but I thought, at least from my aspect, I picked Melvin Ingram just because the defense looked way better once he got in, you know, starting is at the week eight, I believe it was week eight or week nine. They came in and just the defense was way different from what it was the first half of the year. Felt like he brought more energy to the group. And obviously you could just tell how everyone kind of just came, you know, back to focus, I think, for the rest of the year. But I think mostly he probably was more deserved on that. My other one that could have went with Nick Bolton, but I'd like to hear who you'd actually have for your most valuable defensive player.
So mine is Tyrann Mathieu. I think the times where he was injured, it showed how much we needed him when he wasn't 100%. And even his play, I think this year, in the games that he played, which was still a really good amount, he was better at tackling, more physical, always in the right spots. I mean, that game versus Baltimore, which was his first one back, if I'm not mistaken, he had, what, two interceptions and one pick six?
Right, yeah.
So he just overall throughout the year, the MVP of the defense because of his presence, his knowledge on the field, and also his play. So I did have an honorable mention for Melvin Ingram as well because everything you said, I agree with spot on.
Yeah, and Tyrann Mathieu, you know, there was those games, like I said, if he wasn't out there and there on the field, like I didn't see how the Chiefs were going to pull out a victory. So there is times when he was definitely probably – I totally agree with that statement where he probably would be, the most vocal point of the whole defense for some of the games that when he was out there. So I could definitely agree with that one too as well. And then so most improved defensive player, this one was tough for me. I don't know about you, but I was trying to like go down and looked and see, you know, obviously you can't count anybody that just signed with the Chiefs this year. But I did went with Rashad Fenton on this one just because he played consistently when he was in the games throughout the course of the year. And I think at one point he was ranked in the top five, maybe top three cornerbacks in coverage throughout the league. So I thought when as far as his play from last year and this year, I think obviously improved. He also got, I think, more time towards the end of the year as it went by too as well. So that's why I went with Rashad Fenton for my pick.
Yeah, same player for me. I agree on everything you mentioned. He just stepped up, was a lot more consistent than he has been in the past few years. Not saying he wasn't consistent when he played, right? But just got a bigger role, did well. He talked about some of his rankings. Just did a really good job of being that nickel back for us. And then I didn't talk much about Mike Hughes or DeAndre Baker in my cornerback grade. Without a doubt, played better than, Mike Hughes at one point was a high draft pick. DeAndre Baker was also a high draft pick and it got hurt. So, yeah, Rashad Fenton is without a doubt my most improved player on defense.
And then, so your defensive grade overall, like for the whole defensive thing, what did you go with as far as on that?
Yeah, so my defensive grade was a C-. They started terribly. I mean, historically record-breaking bad defense. But they definitely recovered, and they recovered really, really good. I mean, they had multiple games where they held opponents to under 15 points, which is a rarity in modern-day NFL. 28 total sacks is bad for a team that has that much money invested in their defensive line. I get there's a scheme perspective. The Bills, the Patriots, and the Bucks were in, are the top five least sacking team in the NFL, if that's the appropriate terms. And the Bills are the best defense in the NFL, right? So it's a little bit of scheme, so it's a little lying. Sacks are kind of a little bit of a lying number because pressures, hurries, all that stuff affects as well. I just don't have access to those. But at the end of the day, they do their job. The defense held us together a lot of times when the offense wasn't. So I think at the beginning of the year, it's probably a F. Well, not probably, definitely an F. And then in the second half, even into the playoffs, it was between, a B to almost even an A-. So averaging that out is why I gave him a C-.
Yeah, I went with right around there. I went with a C+ just because more so of how the defense played in the second half of the year. I mean, obviously we can't forget about how drastic, and I totally agree with you. If you had to just rate the first like seven games, it's definitely an F. I don't even know if you can go with like a G, but I mean, it was pretty bad. So, but as far as, you know, towards the end of the season and into the playoffs, I would definitely, you know, obviously would have given it, like you were saying, like a B or even an A at that point. But yeah, I think C plus for me, just because of how they finished off the year performance wise. Now, I know you you already did your special team, so I was just going to kind of throw mine in there. But for as far as my special teams grade for the year, I went with A minus just because the kicking and punting game we had from Butker and Tommy Townsend for the punting game too as well. I think they both did had a solid year. Didn't really have anything that could really say anything, you know, kind of even negatively about them. I think obviously Tommy Townsend, it was his second season. And I think even he won the award for special teams of the week again this year. So, he, you know, obviously he improved in his game. Harrison Butker, what can you say about him? He's, you know, pretty much one of the most consistent kickers in the league who doesn't seem to miss often, which is obviously a nice thing. And then as far as on the return game-wise, where you had Pringle on kick returns and you had Hardman on punt returns, you didn't really see a whole lot of things obviously on kick returns at these days because obviously they're more sort of kicked out of the end zone. So Pringle, I wouldn't say had a whole lot of effect on some of his returns. I will say though on punt returns for McCall Hardman, he had a lot more, I would say better performance as far as returning kicks in the punt game towards the end of the season. Definitely showed up and gave us better field position from there. So I will say, you know, for that was a factor. So I went with an A minus as far as on the special teams grade. As far as our overall for the whole team grade for the 2021 NFL season, what would be your grade you give them, Rich?
I mean, I think a B or even like a B minus is justified. I mean, when you look at the whole year, yes, I get that. You know, the beginning what really counts is the end of the game, the end of the year. But then again, you know, you still got to factor in those things, right? We had a new line to factor in, a new playing style for the offense. Defense had to get healthy. So we worked it out as everyone would, and then we put it together, and we were arguably the best team in the NFL there heading into the playoffs in the first few weeks of the playoffs. And then something happened in that second half of that AFC Championship game. But, yeah, so overall I would say a solid B factoring in those bad performances early on. They figured it out. There's a new style of play or another style of play, I should say. And then defense does what they're supposed to do. Now, you know, not factoring the fact that we didn't make it to the Super Bowl and we blew a pretty decent lead there at that, you know, from the half. That's why I give them a B.
Yeah, and I'm right there spot on with you. I actually got a B too as well. There is just it was a rough year for you know how the Chiefs had played, obviously from the start and the beginning to the end. You know, finishing up capitalizing on a lot of the games to win, you know, later in the season. But compared to the last two seasons where we went to the Super Bowl, we definitely went through our hurdles this year on injuries and different turnovers we had on, you know, on offense. Some of them just, you know, minor, you know, some mistakes that just kind of happened that normally wouldn't happen in the previous games that we'd had. So, and then obviously our, you know, our defense kind of giving up some big plays early on in the season. You know, like I said, it kind of culminated the whole season, I think, you know, how we played early on in the season till we did late in the season into that AFC Championship game there. All in that whole game, it kind of was like how the whole season kind of performed, how, you know, down we went in the second half and just couldn't obviously overcome that, you know, bad second half to go to the Super Bowl. But I think giving our team for the year a solid B grade is probably spot on as far as how it was throughout the whole season. So I would say just real quick, you have any, I guess, final thoughts on how our whole team had played for the year?
No, I mean, nothing really much more to add. Just, you know, it was an acclimation period for a lot of new pieces, a different way of playing or an additional way of playing. We put it all together. And then, unfortunately, right there in 30 minutes, well, 30-something minutes since we went to overtime, mm-hmm. we weren't able to finalize it. And it's funny because that AFC Championship game was like a culmination of the Chiefs' 2021 season.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
It was like a tale of two halves.
Mm-hmm.
From brilliance to absolute, you know, mind-boggling play.
It really was. Yeah. Yep. All right, so moving into one of our final couple topics we have for our episode today, we'll start with the NFL award ceremony. And just before we kind of go over the award ceremony, just for listeners at home, the awards are based on regular season performance that are actually voted on by various, I believe there's like 50 people in the media, the Monday after the last regular season game. So this has nothing to do with anything in the playoffs or anything. But I know because a lot of people are like, well, how do some of these players win these awards when they don't perform in the playoffs? Well, it doesn't matter as far as what they do in the playoffs. It's all about the regular season. So and kind of we just go over the real quick ones and we can kind of just either point one or two of them out that we'll kind of talk about. But I'll start with the most valuable player of the league this year was Aaron Rodgers. You know, obviously nothing really you could say about that. He just played pretty well throughout the whole season. I will say so much on that. So he definitely deserved that award. Offensive player of the year was Cooper Kupp for the Rams. Defensive player of the year was TJ Watt from the Steelers. Offensive rookie of the year was Jamal Chase from the Bengals. Defensive rookie of the year was Mecole Parsons from the Cowboys. Comeback player of the year was Joe Burrow from the Bengals. And then the head coach of the year was Mike Vrabel of the Titans. So which one of those would you say, you know, you might have a little bit of, I don't know, like probably could have picked somebody different for that, or do you think most of these are pretty spot on?
For me, it was the MVP. The other ones are, I mean, pretty hard to argue against. You know, after Mike Vrabel, I didn't see the votes. So, you know, after Mike Vrabel, it could have been Zach Taylor. I think he made a great case. But, I mean, Mike Vrabel held a team together despite losing Julio, A.J. Brown, and Derrick Henry, and they ended up being the number one seed, right, which is what the award is for, regular season mm-hmm. accomplishments. But from an MVP perspective, I think what Cooper Kupp accomplished, not only, I mean, again, right, it's only, you don't factor in the playoffs because it's done before, but what he accomplished as a receiver in this year alone should be, you know, more than just an offensive player worthy. Really, at the end of the day, offensive or MVP, it almost ends up being a quarterback. Right. And I get it's the most important position in the NFL, but, you know, Cooper Kupp deserved a little bit more than just, you know, offensive player of the year because of what he accomplished. And it was so unique to, let's say, the position, even in the modern game. So that's the one where, you know, if I were a voter or however that works, I would have definitely voted for Cooper Kupp.
Yeah, and I could definitely see that, especially after I didn't know that he actually led pretty much all the categories for wide receivers. I didn't realize that until after the Super Bowl.
Triple crown, right?
Right, a triple crown, which, you know, he's up to with someone like Jerry Rice, you know, all time. It's really crazy that he did that all in one season for the things that he kind of did throughout the season and postseason. I guess the one that I would say, you know, kind of maybe deserved a little bit too more from me would have been Jonathan Taylor. I thought that overall his performance was fantastic for the year. I think it was his second season in the NFL, but I think he could have gotten close. Obviously, I don't, you know, just because obviously we're, like we said, the quarterback is the pinnacle for the MVP award. It's hard seeing anybody else getting that. And Jonathan Taylor, even though he had a better season, I think I agree with you as far as on Cooper Kupp. He would probably be the second closest to Aaron Rodgers than Taylor, but he's probably right up there as well, I thought. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard whenever that's kind of the standard for the award that you have to, you know, it's almost like you have to go above and beyond, like maybe like an Adrian Peterson, like 2,200 yard rushing year with like 20 touchdowns or something ridiculous to beat any kind of quarterback for that award.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, what you mentioned there with Jonathan Taylor is, I would without a doubt been okay with him as the offensive player, Cooper Kupp as the MVP, because I get, you know, it's most valuable player. So, you know, no crap. Then it should only be a quarterback award, because if you don't have a quarterback, you'll end up like the Lions. The Jaguars might have Trevor Lawrence, right? Mm-hmm. But everybody knows that technically, you know, Chiefs without Mahomes would not be where they are. So yes, we know that. But like you said, right, if you're achieving something that is only unique to having Jerry Rice as the other name, that's pretty unique. You know, that's a, I mean, and take away Cup from the Rams, they're probably still good, but do they not only, you know, do as good as they did in the regular season, but then make it to the playoffs? And that's another reason why I think that they should kind of factor in the entire picture, is because let's say like Jonathan Taylor, is he deserving of an award if his team didn't make the playoffs? So that's the, you know, and that's why they do it the way they do it, right? So,
right.
Like I, you know, what he did in modern day game where you don't run the ball as much and how he tore up some defenses, you know, it's deserving of something. So, yeah, I think it just becomes the MVP is just who's the best quarterback, and then the offensive player is, well, who is the second best offensive player?
Right. Totally agree with that.
It's almost like the Heisman, right? The Heisman, mm-hmm. when Devonta Smith won it, it was cool to see that because it had been a while since a wide receiver had won it. But yeah, the Heisman has really just become who is the best quarterback in college football, and it's the same in the NFL.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's weird how they do the awards for sure. It's got to go to the quarterback, but yeah, we'll see how hopefully maybe something like that might change, you know, in the future. But it's just how it's been for the standard for years, it seems like. So, so on to the 2022 Hall of Fame class. For the NFL, it had some surprising names on this list, which I'll kind of go over. But I know we have some talk a little bit on some that probably should have been in this year. But we'll start with Tony Boselli, offensive tackle for the Jags, got in. Leroy Butler, safety from the Packers. Sam Mills, linebacker from the Saints, Panthers. Rashard Seymour, defensive line for the Patriots and Raiders. Bryant Young, the defensive line from 49ers, and Dick Vermeil, which Chiefs fans, we all know, obviously head coach of the Eagles, Rams, and obviously our Chiefs. So what are your thoughts as far as those being inducted and who should have probably got in, you know, maybe replaced or just got in some of these other names?
Yeah, overall, I think everyone is deserving. You know, I wouldn't debate that. You know, Richard Seymour anchored the New England Patriots defensive line for a long time. His stint with the Raiders was brief. I mean, you know, nothing too crazy. But, I mean, he was one of the – him and Vince Wilfork were the main reason that defensive setup for the Patriots through all those Super runs was so good. So that's understandable, right? And I always think of the Hall of Fame award, aside from numbers, when explaining that era of football, do you need these names? Tony Boselli, without a doubt, arguably the best Jacksonville Jaguar of all time, you know, went to an AFC championship with them after becoming a new franchise within, I think it was within like the first 3 to 4 years. Cliff Branch, you know, one of the all-time best Raiders. So definitely very deserving after 32 years of eligibility.
Leroy, yeah, I forgot Butler, to mention him too, yeah.
Yeah, so Cliff Branch, right? I mean, you know, his numbers kind of speak for himself. And it's weird because he wore number 21 as a wide receiver, mm-hmm. which bothered me because I thought he was a corner. So Leroy Butler, I remember him from, you know, the Packers in the 90s. And I think he was a good safety overall. I'd have to look at his numbers to understand, you know, let's say how good they are overall. So not really too much of a comment there. I know they do the one off-the-field contributor, which is the referee Art McNally. So let's say, you know, I don't know much about referees, right? Sam Mills, I know that's somebody that holds dear to your heart because of, you know, him being there in division rival and then a Carolina Panther. Mm-hmm. So he was, I remember him, he was a good linebacker, 20 years of eligibility. So no disputes there. We already talked about Richard Seymour. Dick Vermeil, it's actually a little crazy that it took this long because, I mean, what he did in Philly, then in St. Louis, in Kansas City, you know, all of those things put him in like the top at least 15 for sure, but 10 coaches all time in the NFL. So it was kind of weird that it took him this long. Bryant Young, I actually had a discussion with a buddy over Bryant Young and a current player in the NFL. And I think Bryant Young, his numbers are okay overall. You know, he's not like top 20 in anything from a defensive line perspective, but he played for a winning franchise and those things help. Like Terry Bradshaw's numbers aren't the greatest, but he played for a what, three-time Super Bowl winning team in the Pittsburgh Steelers. So
right.
Overall for me, it's the class is okay. It makes sense. There aren't any like, wow, those are generational, you know, best top five all time.
Yeah, it's not like Peyton Manning or Charles Woodson.
Right, like last year, right? Or was it last year or the year before? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, for me, the biggest part was, you know, and also I'm probably kind of biased because I'm a Miami Hurricanes fan, but Andre Johnson has top 10 for sure, top five, if I'm not mistaken, wide receiver numbers. Reggie Wayne, to me, is one of the best wide receivers all time. His numbers are top, I think, 12 in every major receiving category, maybe except for yards. And then, you know, Devin Hester, maybe his numbers aren't the best from an overall returning perspective, but his touchdowns alone, you know, especially with how they changed the kick return game, will probably never be touched. He was the most dangerous return man of all time in the NFL so far, right? So maybe Devin Hester doesn't get it in the first time because he's, you know, a kick returner or a punt returner. But you can't tell the story of the NFL in that time without saying this man changed. He is the reason the rule is the way it is now, right?
Right.
So there's Hester. Like I said, Wayne is very, very deserving. Andre Johnson was baffling because he said he's one of the best wide receivers from a number perspective. But I think in as much as people say it shouldn't factor in, it does. He played for the Houston Texans, and they were basically terrible his whole time there. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if he made one playoff appearance because the – Well, I guess he did, you know, in his later years with Bill O'Brien, right? But yeah, I think that factors into it. So those three were the big names to me. Like I said, Johnson was, I thought, a for sure first ballot. Wayne deserves to be in by now, but I think, you know, his will come up within the next 5 years. And then Hester should be in there within his first 10 years of eligibility.
Yep. I agree with all the points you kind of made about it. So I don't have too much more to kind of relay on top of that. I will just say, as far as the class wise, that were inducted with, obviously Sam Mills, you know, with the Panthers, and what he all had done for the community of Charlotte and everything that he had done. I think it was well deserved. Obviously, he started the keep pounding movement for the Panthers, who have that stitched to their on the inside of their jerseys, and all as far as that phrase and everything as well. So you know, him getting in was also you know, something I definitely was looking forward to one day, and glad that he finally got in. I wish he was still around to see it, but it was definitely something well-deserved. And then also, of course, Dick Vermeil, to me, kind of obviously points out just because of the time he spent with the Chiefs. But like you had said, it's surprising it took him this long to finally get into the Hall of Fame. But overall in the class, like you said, there's anything that stands out as far as like huge impactful players as far as the generation goes. I mean, maybe Tony Piselli, because he was one of the, you know, better offensive tackles he, you know, played during the course of his career, but nothing that really stands out to somebody that, you know, might only know like some of the big key players from the last generations and whatnot of football. But I don't have anything problem with all the picks that they had. Like I said, it would have been interesting if they kind of would have put in Andre Johnson, just because I think he deserved it with all the, like I said, wide receiver categories like you mentioned he owned. But as far as all the introductions or inductees themselves, I think I don't have any issue this year with who they had. All right. And then our final topic of this episode kind of focuses on some stuff going on that we've heard in the media all this week as far as on the Chiefs. And if you guys know what I'm talking about that one article that was released online that has since been removed. Kind of focused on Eric the Enemy, you know, relationship with the Chiefs as far as Patrick Mahomes goes. What are your overall thoughts on it? I know we've talked about this a lot this week, obviously, you know, in our chats and all that. But, you know, it's funny reading it and then everything coming out after it as far as, you know, player support for, you know, obviously this stuff is not real. And of course it isn't. I mean, you can't think any of this stuff was going on. Do you have any kind of thing where, you know, maybe possibly something is close to what they're saying? You know, it's possible, right? It's possible that some of the stuff is actually true, but, you know, I just don't think so. And you know, at the end of the day, I can't see how some of this actually even happened. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've already spent a few days kind of going back and forth about my thoughts on that. So to me, it's one of those where the article came out and it's entertaining because it's believable, but there weren't any sources, even though they said they did have sources. You know, not only has the article been taken down now, but people have come out saying that, you know, this is false and they've been pushing false narratives with specifics, right? Not saying that some of those things might not be true. But you know, I'm one of those people that usually only take the truth directly from the source. So in this case, being the Chiefs, Bienemy, Reed, Mahomes, any other guys directly involved, right? So yeah, I mean it was just one of those where I guess you can, because you can see those things and they fit the reason why maybe things have happened, it's believable. But yeah, you know, my thing was, and I want to say this in a way that, you know, I'm not pushing any other controversy aside from the fact that, you know, every time something bad happens with the Chiefs offense, it's Bieniemy, right? Bieniemy's do, you know, Bieniemy calls the plays now, or Bieniemy doesn't. When Chiefs win, it's Reed or it's Mahomes. Oh, well, Bieniemy doesn't get the benefit of the doubt that, you know, maybe he does, maybe your offensive coordinator for basically your entire career does get some kind of benefit for, you know, what you've accomplished, right? Because there are several other coordinators, head coaches, all that stuff that get the benefit, but Bieniemy seems to sometimes not have the benefit, right? And like I said, you know, that's exactly what I'm saying. There's nothing I'm leaving out or anything like that. So for me, that's just the most, I guess, puzzling piece out of all of it. And I mean, you know, in talking to friends that I have that were big Patriot fans, it's that's what happens when you're good, man. When you're good, everyone tries to find something to talk about. You know, we're in modern, I mean, we're able to have this podcast because we just created a platform and somebody will listen to us. And that's kind of the same thing with, I guess, journalism nowadays, right? You can post something on Twitter, Instagram, whatever. There's just so many ways to create news, even though it may not be factual. So, you know, I guess maybe his contract extension has already happened and the Chiefs haven't released it as they did, as they didn't do last year. So they didn't do that, you know, when they extended him last year.
Well, but I think the
Again,
difference is between last year and this year is it wasn't talked about. Like, right, last year
right.
everyone just thought he was already under contract, where this year it's in the news about that he's not under contract. So
Right.
it's a little bit different this year, but I totally agree. Like, if he did get re-signed, they might not even mention it. And they're like, what happened? Well, I'm like, you guys basically point out he was a free agent and you never announced that he was re-signed. So it'll be different.
Yeah, and like, and remember when after we lost, he went and interviewed with the Saints, and that's another reason why it came up is because they said their Chiefs wouldn't have to get any compensation from the Saints or anything like that. So whoever hires him, he's technically a free agent anyway. So Chiefs don't get any compensation from it, and then it would kind of be like a natural part, right? So again, I think it just it the article and everything being said fits the narr fits a potential narrative. That's what makes it entertaining. But yeah, I mean, I think I like Matt Nagy. You know, he went from doing well in Chicago, being I think coach of the year, if I'm not mistaken, his first year in Chicago, and they made the playoffs, to missing the playoffs the next like year, and then they had to revamp the quarterback situation because Trubisky didn't do well, and you know, just didn't end well for him in Chicago. So, and that's the main name that they're talking about bringing in as an OC if Bieniemy leaves. I think it'd be crazy for the Chiefs to say, "Well, we're going to get rid of Bieniemy," you know, saying that there aren't any issues as discussed in those articles, and then bring in Matt Nagy. You know, if you have the choice, where you keep Bieniemy, you keep consistency going. Patrick Mahomes loves him. Kelce does. Hill does. Adults argue. You know, you get grown men in a highly competitive environment. They argue. They have disagreements. You know, yeah. Sometimes there's a point of no return. So who knows? Maybe we'll find out more in the next few weeks as the new calendar year starts.
Right. And, you know, just to kind of relay on some of the stuff you talked about, it's just, you know, I just, it's hard to believe, like, just, yeah, any of that stuff really, you know, mentioned. And obviously, I would say anybody listening that didn't see the article, they go read it, but they can't read it because it's been taken down. But so it's kind of, and we would take a lot more time going into detail of some of the things that were actually talked about in it. But you kind of went over kind of, you know, majority of, you know, kind of what was discussed. But and then you have like the whole thing where someone who was a verified person on Twitter or, you know, is really good with sources, you know, goes and then, you know, reveals that, like, you know, Mahomes is like brother and wife aren't out of the games anymore. And that wasn't true. And then Mahomes puts out the tweet saying that you guys are just making up anything these days, which is very true. What Mahomes said. So it's just a lot of just weird things going on in the media right now that don't make sense, and they're not accurate. They're not actual information at all. And you know, people are just kind of almost, you know, these people that are reliable sources even are spreading things that, you know, saying that things are true or not. It's just, it's gotten kind of out of hand, I would say, in a way, on some of these things. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad that Mahomes, you know, kind of went on Twitter and says, man, you guys are just crazy at this point, right? Basically, it's kind of what he's saying. So, but yeah, I think at the end of the day, I mean, everything's, you know, you get, you know, they'll get resolved. And, but as far as some of the stuff that came out, obviously, just not true.
Yeah, I mean, that Mahomes article, and we know, you know, Brittany, especially, I guess, in Jackson, they've received criticism, so on and so forth, man. But like, people just have to understand that's modern day society. Mm-hmm. You know, LaVar Ball used to get crap for being really involved in his kid's life. And I know there's certain things there that, you know, maybe for some folks is too much or too little, so on and so forth. But man, it's like, I don't get this, this modern day understanding that we can say something about everything, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, man, at the end, you know, did you see the one where, well, I guess it is part of that article, right? Where Patrick mm-hmm. was talking to Brittany at the Texas Tech game and she says something and everyone's like, oh my God, you know, somebody yeah. save Patrick. It's like, have you been in a relationship? You know, like, people don't get along 1,000% of the time. There are times where you know, your spouse pisses you off. And we don't even know that was a situation, right? Like right, that was yeah. some lip reading. So it's like, man, it's just crazy to see it. But that's just how it is. And when you're in the limelight, you're going to get that stuff, you know, both Patrick, Brittany, and I'm sure Jackson, you know, they understand that. They understand the light they're in. And, you know, they probably have conversations about it at home and they work right. through those things. And, yeah, I mean, they'll end up handling it at however. It's just, you know, it's something to talk about, which is what we're doing too, right?
Yeah. At the same point, it's like, and like you said, social media has ruined a lot of things and not just normal lives, but also like in sports, professional athletes' lives and stuff like that, where people focus on things too much that don't even need to be focused on. You know, to me, it doesn't even matter, like some of the things, but it's just like, it's just the way society is today, right? With different things. But so, yeah. And at the end, it's just, it, you know, it's just like, well, I'm glad that Mahomes, you know, finally came out and said something as far as on Twitter, but he didn't have to. I mean, obviously, he didn't need to at all, but I thought it was kind of funny, his tweet about, you know, saying that you guys are just making everything up these days. But yeah, it's interesting how things are portrayed in the sports world and media these days.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's, you know, before, like, you know, people talk about Michael Jordan, social media was around when he was playing. He probably would have got canceled 100%, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
With all his hobbies he had outside of sports.
Right.
So, yeah. And man, like with Patrick, I think without a doubt, he's a unicorn because not only does he, like, he doesn't post a lot on social media. You know, let's say maybe his wife and his brother do, and they include him every now and then. But I mean, he's just so rare. He doesn't get caught up in a lot of that stuff. The man's always focused on, you know, being the best possible, player. And as shown by his heart rate monitor in that Bills game, the guy's pretty cool. So, mm-hmm. you know, what is a little bit of fighting on or defending folks on social media for him? You know, there's nothing. And in the Bienemy situation, I'm sure we'll have something more within the next few weeks on it, right? As the new right. calendar year opens up, mm-hmm. Because they have to have the coach under contract. So we'll see. And, you know, hopefully Bienemy stays and, you know, next year we'll go through this exact same setup of why he doesn't have a job if he still doesn't have one.
Correct. Yeah, so more, definitely more to come on his situation with Chiefs as well as we progress into the new calendar year for the 2022 season. All right, so with that will conclude Today's episode, all of the Chiefs 2021 season, and actually our first whole year doing this podcast with you, Rich. Any final thoughts on, you know, how we've kind of done this for the whole year? I thought it was really fun doing this for the first year and continue on with the second year doing this.
Yeah, it was definitely awesome. Glad we finally got it going. We had talked about it for a while. A lot of learnings, a lot of improvements needed, a lot of really good things we did. And, you know, we're definitely going to be talking over the next few weeks on how to make this even bigger and better. And I think, you know, not only will we like it, but other folks will like it as well. And, 2022 will be a really nice year for us.
Yep. Well said. Definitely check back with us soon as we'll start our free agency talk here in the upcoming weeks, which actually free agency starts March 16th. So we'll have maybe some of that combine highlights coming up on our future episodes coming up. And like I said, talk for the new football season and into the, like I said, upcoming 2022 year. So thanks again, everyone, for listening today. Don't forget to follow our podcast and go Chiefs!